I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about something close to my life and work, the different ways today's journalists have to report and deliver stories. Technological advances and changes in the way people live have created revolutionary alterations in the teaching and profession of journalism. We're going to talk about these changes and what they mean with Lisa Hatley Major, Interim Dean of the IU School of Journalism, Ball State University instructor John Strauss, and WTHR Channel 13 reporter Chris Kirshner. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org. You also can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu. And by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about a subject today that is close to my heart, my life, and that is really the changes in the journalism world, what we inside the industry call news convergence or working across media platforms. And if you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Got a great group of guests today, starting with a colleague of mine, John Strauss, who is an instructor at Ball State University. John, welcome to the program.
Thanks, John.
It's good to have you here. I should do, just as in the spirit of full disclosure, disclose that
I know you.
Yeah, you do. John and I are on the Indianapolis Press Club Foundation board together. Also joining us is Chris Kirshner, who is a reporter with WTHR Channel 13. Chris, welcome to the program.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And joining us by phone, presumably from Bloomington, is Lisa Hatley Major, who is the interim dean of the IU School of Journalism. Lisa, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Certainly. It's good to have you here. Well, Lisa, I think probably you're the one who's right in the middle of the vortex right now, because there have been a lot of changes in the way that the journalism program is going to be, and I hate this word, but delivered at IU now. Could you talk a little bit about the changes down there and what has prompted them?
Oh, sure. Well, the Board of Trustees in October of this year voted on a proposal that would unite the School of Journalism and two other departments in the College of Arts and Sciences, Telecommunications and Communication and Culture. So these three units will be brought together beginning on July 1st of 2014 to form the Media School. And it's the Media School and then also Journalism, Film, and Communication. And this new school will be housed in the college. And so that's the change that will happen beginning July 1st of 2014 in terms of the School of Journalism no longer being an independent school of journalism, but being part of the media school in the college.
And what prompted those changes? I mean, what was the reasoning behind it?
Well, several things, and I think really the one that I would feel I think that is most important to talk about right now has to do with a student focus and looking at with these. It developed from evaluating the three different units we're talking about and the classes that these units were offering, what they were the focus of these different units, and thinking how the three of these units could be brought together and how best we could serve our students in terms of this would be not only in continuing what we at the IU School of Journalism have done for 100 years, the teaching, writing, reporting, interviewing all of those skills, but then also looking at what we could do in terms of, I think, technology and helping our students continue to develop the skills that they need to move forward and work across, as you said earlier, different platforms. And so that really was, if you had the chance to look, the proposal has been on the provost, Lorne Rebell's website since, I think it's been since right before the Board of Trustees, probably a couple of weeks before the Board of Trustees voted on the proposal. If you look at that proposal, you read it, it's very clear that it is focused on students and how we would, as you said, deliver classes, what the curriculum will be. And there's also a focus on technology in terms of what we would do. You know, for education is always, higher education is always forward-looking and thinking about the future, and this proposal is very much based on that. It was based on how we would move forward in terms of journalism education and also these other areas involved in this curriculum.
Now, John, you, like me, are relatively a latecomer to academia. I mean, we both spent a lot of our careers as working journalists. What changes, I'm going to do this in two ways because I want to get Chris in on this too, but what are the big changes you have seen in the profession and the way that we do this work, and also now that you are at Ball State and the ways that we have to prepare students to do the work?
Gee, these changes have been enormous, and as someone who loves to read the news and watch the news on television and listen to it on the radio, I'm delighted that there's more opportunities to kind of examine a story as deeply as I want to now than before, right? So before, there might just be an account in the newspaper or on television. Now, typically in an online presentation, you can drill down, see the documents, listen to the sound bites, read the layers of the story that are put together when the presentation is well done. So I think that's an exciting development. As an educator, is just in my sixth year now, I'm experiencing this enormous challenge that we have to prepare students for a multi-platform world in which, you know, the jobs that they're going to have in 10 years haven't been invented yet, and they may well be inventing them. And so we're preparing students for multimedia careers, but also in stressing the foundation concepts of strong writing, editing, of visual storytelling.
Right. Mm-hmm. Chris, you've been at THR for more than a decade. How have things changed in the way you have to do?
They've changed 180 degrees from when I started, and I've been there 16 years, and that's really not that long of a time. But when you look at, I mean, I've been in there as long as you had one newscast, you know, in the evening or maybe one at noon, to where we've broadened our newscast. We have, you know, 2 to 4 hours, depending on the station, in the morning. You have another new newscast. You have the evening newscast. You know, we were busy trying to fill that time. And now you've added, oh, by the way, all this social media, which is what we're kind of focusing on right now, how to bring that into it to get our viewer, to keep our viewer where we want them, but also to incorporate them in all the platforms that they're utilizing now. And that's just something that's come recently for us that we've embraced just in the last couple of years.
We are talking about the ways journalism has changed here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or on Twitter at WFYI. Chris, I'm going to stay with you. I mean, you know, we have all sorts of different ways of delivering the stories now.
Right.
Has it changed the way you tell the stories? Has it changed the way you report?
I think it has a little bit. Just practically speaking, the time it takes for you to do it, because so much more is expected in terms of what you're delivering. Not only are you developing your story and you're trying to get the sources and you're trying to get all the information in a relatively quick form, at least in television, but now you have to try to be the first one or get that newest information out there on Twitter or on Facebook or on some kind of platform before you've even put the whole story together. And it's been a challenge, not only local television, but I think across the board. Even networks recently have gotten in trouble with that. And I think to your end, John, when we're talking about educating students now, that's one of the things that really has to be emphasized, is making sure you have the right information, because everybody can put stuff out there now, and you have to make sure the information that you're delivering is right, is accurate, is credible, So there's all that going on at the same time, I think, more so than just focusing on this one story for this one platform.
Well, we've got, there are probably, just to move us ahead in the conversation a little bit here, several things have gone on. You know, we've got these huge technological advances that give us more ways to do it. Those have contributed in a way that pretty much there is no news cycle anymore, or the news cycle is continuous. And in the process, a lot of these technological advances, if they did not shatter the business model that most news organizations operated with, it put some pretty deep dents into them. And, you know, so we're having to cope with all of that. And I guess, Lisa, in terms of the way you're reshaping your curriculum at IU, which of those challenges do you find the easiest, the most daunting, and which is the most easy to meet?
Well, I think the...
And then if you have an answer, please let the rest of us know.
I have that answer. Yeah. Wouldn't you love it if I had that answer?
Yeah.
Well, it's we are reaching out. I guess I don't want to say it's funny, but it's very appropriate that you would bring this question to us as we're looking at curriculum. And the same way, of course, that at a research institution, the same way that we're looking at how you answer questions, research questions, and, of course, multidisciplinary, interdisciplinary work is quite common in things, because if you're, you know, I work in the area of health communication, and so if I'm looking at a health issue, a health problem, understanding sociology, psychology, these different areas of trying to research something, it's not, if I'm looking at media coverage, it's not simply looking at it from a media coverage point of view. The same is true as we're looking at the, of course, what's happening now, just to go back with this, is that we're working with faculty now to look at the curriculum, examine what these three units have been doing, and then putting the curriculum together. Faculty will, of course, take the biggest lead with that. They'll take the lead in terms of determining how we do this. And this is involved, not only are we working with faculty, but looking at external individuals to, whether it's in the business, whether it's, other groups to help us figure out how we need to move forward on this. But I would say the same. I've been talking with, of course, the deans across the campus about how we solve problems, and that includes with the dean of the business school and thinking about business models and how you can look at things and say, okay, this could be, let's look at how we could apply this to journalism in this situation. So I think probably what makes this, if I could just say, and I'd love to hear what the other guests think about this, is just that it's so much more complicated than when I went to school and studied journalism, in terms of what we need to know, and thinking about business models and thinking about the skills needed to do this. And so it's I find the balance of what students need, how we need to do – I mean, you want students to be able to do – things well. And so it's the balance of not just giving them so much content, I think, that they're overwhelmed and don't know how to work through this and leave with the skills that they need, but yet you do want to make sure that they do have what they need. And that's not an easy task, too. And it's certainly something that we're finding that, of course, career counseling and advising, these things have to work together, working with people, outside of the academic institutions. This is just one of those, I think, this issue where we're going to need, it's going to take a village to think about this. And, boy, I wish I did have the answer for you about how we would do it. It's certainly something that we're looking at and evaluating all parts of this.
Chris, to put this in some perspective for people, you said you started at THR 16 years ago.
Right.
Compare the size of the newsroom at 16 years ago and the size of the newsroom now. How many people?
You're putting me on the spot with that one. I would say it's a little bit smaller than perhaps it was 16 years ago, but not much. but, you know, I don't know if that's changing or not. I see a lot more local television stations, not ours necessarily, going to a multimedia journalist, an MMJ reporter, mm-hmm. somebody that is shooting the video and, mm-hmm. and is putting it out on social media and is doing the reporting as well. We've kind of been immune to that for the most part, but I do see that happening at TV stations. And I was just thinking about, you know, with the convergence, we did a similar thing with the Indianapolis Star not too many years ago, where we said, okay, let's combine mm-hmm. our news gathering, and we still call it our news gathering partnership, but it was more, I think, utilizing resources where the Star might have some deeper resources that we could use, and they'd give it more in depth, and we could report on some of it, and we would share some of that. But I think this type of convergence is a little different in that you're trying to reach a different audience. You're not trying to share resources, but you're trying to reach that audience.
We are talking about the ways journalism has changed here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can email us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. I'm John Kroll. My guests are Lisa Hatley Major, John Strauss, Chris Kirchner. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about the many changes in the world of journalism. My guests are Lisa Hatley Major, who is the interim dean of the IU School of Journalism, John Strauss, who's an instructor at Ball State University, and Chris Kirchner, who is a reporter at WTHR Channel 13. John, before we went to the break, we were talking a bit about, you know, staffing changes and really the business model. And you and I worked together for a while at the Star. You know, talk about to set this up, when did you start working at the Star? What year?
I was with the Associated Press as a manager for 10 years before joining the Star as a City Hall reporter in 1998.
Okay.
And I was with the Star for 10 years, the last 3 years on the online desk. And by the way, we've seen a lot of changes since you and I worked at the newspaper. And I really hope that, yeah. you know, we're not the last generation to see vibrant, healthy community journalism in the form of newspapers or whatever form is necessary. And I think about that all the time. And so when Dean Hatley was talking about business models, that's very much a concern for me that mm-hmm. I want to assure parents and prospective students out there that we're not just thinking about how best to train in foundational skills, how to write and report and so forth.
Well,
let's talk about it
because one of the questions, and I'll throw it to both Lisa and John on this. One of the questions you do get if you're running a journalism or communications program. Mm-hmm. Maybe not from students, but their parents will say, is there going to be a job at the end of this? I mean, are we going to have Junior come here for 4 years, work hard, do well? You know, the implied social contract is at the end of this, if you do everything you're supposed to, there's supposed to be a job. John, what do you tell them?
Well, certainly there's a lot more demand for accountability in higher education today. We only need to look at the Indiana Commission for Higher Education, its expectations on public institutions. Mm-hmm. But I can, mm-hmm. you know, when I talk with moms and dads and prospective students who come by our school, I can point out the 800 positions open right now on journalismjobs.com. 17 of them are in Indiana, many of those for entry-level positions. That's just on the print side. But just beyond the traditional newsrooms that some of us grew up in, there are a host of applications for the critical thinking skills, the communication, investigatory skills that our students graduate with, a host of opportunities for those people to practice that kind of work, not just in journalism. There will be journalism jobs. They're going to change quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But even beyond that, as we know, this is one of the best sort of all-around educations that a young person can get in terms of how to think and express themselves and find out the truth.
But I guess where I'm going with this is, at least in the era in which I was trained as a journalist, journalism programs did not focus on things like developing entrepreneurial skills, even developing any corporate survival skills, any of those sorts of things that that you need today. And, you know, to some degree, the criticism has been that we have been slow to, you know, to recognize that reality.
Let me just say this. I mean, we, the industry has come under a lot of criticism. You haven't reacted fast enough. And sure, you know, we just have to be careful, right, that we not lose our way too much. MySpace was an $800 million company 5 years ago. It's off the map now. We do have to remember the things that count. I'm thinking of a job posting that I saw for a new reporter. We're looking for a strong writer who can write with context and clarity and has a passion for news and a sense of urgency. Must have initiative, energy, a good work ethic, excellent interviewing skills, and be a storyteller. I mean, that's not a bad starting point for anybody in any field, right? And the fact that our folks can come out and do that. Now, on the business side, right, we have to this is where, you know, when Knight and the other foundations call for higher ed to rethink what we're doing and think more about community journalism and so forth, we really do need more applied research, I would say, in finding ways to replace the, I think it's $25 billion in annual newspaper revenue and counting now.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named John, and if you would like to send us a question by email, you can do so by sending it to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can call us at 1-866-476-3881. It says, how do ethics scruples come in when speed is being stressed so much?
Right.
How many stories have been walked back since new media and speed have come in without fully checking facts? Lisa, you were the one chuckling, so I'm going to throw it to you.
Well, I think that was that's always and going. If I could just say one thing too about and all of this is we were working with a proposal and our alumni journalism alumni. Of course, I think one of the fears when we were taught when you talk about technology, when you talk about business models, I think people are worried that we will lose our the focus on writing and interviewing and those skills, you know, gathering facts, the ability to disseminate information in a way that the public can use it and understand it. And I think that's where you see people get, they're worried that if you're focusing on something else that we'll lose the focus on those skills in teaching students. And that's something that I have, as I've talked to our alumni and others about the media school, always saying we will not lose that's part of, you know, our tradition. That's what we do well. We're just looking at other tools and the way that students can, you know, get that information out. That's what we're talking about. So, yes, that's the question that we deal with in ethics classes all the time about the speed and how is it, you know, when you're trying to get information out to the public as quickly as possible, do you sacrifice, you know, sourcing and being able to? And so we of course, work with students on this and talk about, you know, making sure that your sources are correct and how you do that quickly and when do you go with something and when do you not go with something, you know, working on that. And that's something that that we have, you know, we teach that in every class. We work on ethics in terms of our journalism curriculum. So I think that that's, of course, that's a critical question. And I go back to, in terms of journalism education, I think not only are we, I think working with students and making sure that our students have the skills that they need. I think media literacy is a very important aspect of this. And what I mean by that is helping the audience understand what it means to be getting credible information and how the audience uses information and where they get information. And, I mean, I am a big believer that any student at a university needs to take a course in media literacy. And I'd be curious to know how, I mean, what you think about this, but I do think that that is something that in journalism education and communication that we also need to be focused on is this helping the public understand, too, that there needs to be a concern for credibility and where they're getting their information.
And let me take a step back on this because I think that media literacy thing is important. Is there, in terms of the students you are getting today, and I'm going to start with Lisa on this one, but I'd also ask John as well. You know, the profile up until many of these changes, for the students who wanted to go into journalism, you know, there were a couple of people. Either they really wanted to write the great American novel and realized that, you know, only one in 200 published authors in the Western Hemisphere doesn't have a day job, so you got to figure something else out to do. Or they were the news geeks. I mean, they were the ones who lived and breathed either newspaper or television or broadcast news. Are we seeing the same profile among the students who come to you now? I'll start with you on that one, Lisa.
Well, I mean, I think in terms of being storytellers, and we're seeing two students who are interested in investigative journalism, and students who the storytelling is still there. The student that we, I mean, there is a, I mean, I hate to say, a generational issue here in terms of all of the different platforms where we students, they're very familiar with all of this. I mean, they understand the way of, you know, all the different ways to get information of, and valuing how you can present, you know, visually information, the tools there. So they're the student, the profile of the student in terms of technology and their relationship with technology, that's a very different thing as opposed to, say, when I was in school and have the way I have adapted to technology. Do you understand what I mean? So what we may be as a professor or people who may not have had the technology that we have today, the way, you know, we haven't grown up with this, our relationship, I think, is probably a bit different in the way that we've adapted to it as opposed to the way students think of this. And I think they, when I have, you know, thought about adapting technology, it's a very different thing than when I'm working with students who have come into it very familiar with all of it and are thinking in these ways already, if that makes sense.
Is there, has it changed, though, because there is now so much information out there? Has it changed the attention span for students, John?
Oh, that, yeah, that's an interesting question.
Yes. Yeah, I'd say it has. I'd say it has. But, you know, can I go to your earlier question just a little bit about what inspires students today? You know, in my generation, some of us wanted to be like Mike Royko or Jimmy Breslin or Louis Grizzard or, you know, urban storytellers, getting to the truth behind the things that we saw happening in the world around us. Students today, overall are reading less, in traditional newspaper sources, and they're inspired as much as anything by, taking leadership roles in sort of the information sphere that surrounds them every day and in every way. And so, we'll have students do a marvelous job, out in an event, tweeting what's going on, tweeting quotes back, somebody else in the newsroom assembling a narrative out of that, a story with updates out of that. And they're just terrific at that. And it stems not from wanting to be, you know, great writers and authors, but just the excitement of being in that moment. And, you know, you had a question from somebody who said, well, in effect, isn't that dangerous? I mean, don't we risk committing errors then? And I'd love to hear, you know, Chris's thoughts.
Well,
on,
that's really where I was going next with this, is because the speed, as the one who's still working in the trenches, and it, also with the, there are, you know, four local newscasts here, just in this market that you have to compete with.
Right.
What you know, how has this new pressure, since it used to be even in television there was a news cycle, you know, it happened when your newscast was, and now with a web presence and all of that, the news cycle never stops.
Well, and reading an article on Mashable.com, this was from last year, which said 50% of news consumers have received breaking news via social media only to find out later it was erroneously reported. So I think a lot of times it's going to happen in a breaking news situation, but I think it does go back to the adaptation, the generational element there. Our generations that had to kind of back our way into the technology and how to use it to report the news versus those who are coming out of the schools now who already have a handle on the technology part mm-hmm. of it. So to them, I think it would seem like it would come a little bit easier, although, again, that it's important to have that education of those ethics and knowing what's credible and what's not.
Yeah, John.
One thing is that the students do get this very much. We had a situation on our campus in which there was a report that a person had been seen with a gun, and mm-hmm. that's all there was, a report that a gun had been seen on campus. And the police responded vigorously and taped off sections of around the buildings where this had happened, and the student media began covering it aggressively with reporters out on the scene. And there was one report. I'm advisor of the student newspaper, and we had a very active newsroom as this was going mm-hmm. on, and tweeting and so forth. And there was a report that a hostage had been taken. Well, our folks, before relaying that tweet or doing anything with it, first have called the dispatch center and said, "Is this true?" And it said, "No, it's not." Well, that's just a basic
reporting.
It goes back yeah. to any number of when in doubt, leave it out.
If your mother tells you she loves you, check it out. All of the journalism.
Well, my favorite is the one from United Press. Get it first, but first get it right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that's what we have to do.
The basics yeah. are mm-hmm. still need to be there.
Yeah.
No matter what form that you're utilizing, that's right.
And that's critical thinking. That's where, the critical thinking that we teach in journalism education.
Well, we've gotten actually a tweet from a listener named Courtney who that's right on this point. Says, can you talk about journalism quality versus breaking news first via social media? What are students learning with regard to being first as to being correct? Because, we're talking about it to some degree, and I hate to say it, we are all sort of old school here, too. All of the folks who are in this conversation, we don't have. But, the reality is that the market pressures are much mm-hmm. different than they were in terms of, saying you're going to make that extra call to make sure something is right carries a much greater cost than it would have 30 years ago. John, I'll start with you.
We tell them really one of the best lessons that a newcomer can get or a person young in the business can get is to avoid the pressure of others, especially editors, who in some, not so much in the mainstream outlets, but we have people going out and working for sports mm-hmm. blogs and things like that. And there will be, from time to time, incredible pressure. And there is in the mainstream world, too. Don't you have that? These guys are reporting it. Why don't you have that? And we have to tell the students that it's their reputation. Mm-hmm. You know, if you make a mistake, it's on you. It doesn't matter who was pressuring you or what, you thought you were expected to do. The only thing you're expected to do is get it right. And today, because of the immense competitive pressure, we're seeing more of those mistakes, and not just by college students, of course, but mm-hmm. at every level.
And I think right. it goes to leadership, too, leadership in that news department, because we've had discussions, where another outlet might have tweeted something or put something out on social media. We're still trying to get it confirmed. How do we handle this? We have the discussion. It might be something they got off scanner traffic, which can be so very dangerous mm-hmm. because that's just the initial.
Probably ought to explain for the non-journalists out there what scanner traffic
well,
is.
Well, as the police get a call, something that happens, they're discussing it through their radios, and we have access to that and through apps and everything. Anybody has access to it now, but it might just be the initial what they think is happening, but not necessarily what is actually happening. It hasn't been confirmed by them yet. So you have right. to go back and make sure that you're confirming what's actually happening. So a lot of times that's where the mistakes are made. But we've had that discussion as well as to, when do you we can't put this on until we have this confirmed. And so I think that goes back to leadership as well, who your news director, who your executive producers, who your editors are. It has to be a discussion within the newsroom.
And there's a big right. discussion in the industry mm-hmm. about what to do when you've committed an error in social media. Do you take the tweet down? Do you explain it? If you leave it out there, others may retweet it, not seeing your correction. I mean, and so there are different policies.
Which is the other change in really the business now, at least in the news side, newspaper side. You know, if you ran something and it was wrong and you corrected it the next day. We are talking about the changes in the news business here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. My guests are Lisa Hatley Major, John Strauss, and Chris Kirchner. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about the, I can't even say evolving, revolutionary state of the news business here on No Limits. My guests are Lisa Hatley Major, who is the interim dean of the IU School of Journalism, John Strauss, who's an instructor with Ball State University, and Chris Kirchner, who's a reporter with WTHR Channel 13. We've gotten in. I think these are questions probably directed to John, Lisa, and me from listeners who didn't want to go on the air. One of them is it fair for journalism schools to continue to teach newspaper writing when the jobs in print journalism are incredibly scarce? Lisa, do you want to take that one?
I think the question
better you than me, I guess.
Yeah, I know. I mean, because we think in terms of writing and think in terms of interviewing and think in terms of presenting that information. So I think a focus on the in terms of platform across we work with students across all of these platforms and thinking about how you present information. And so it's rare to have students if you were asked ask a student what do they think they're going to be, you know, what's their focus, for them to say, you know, print focus or broadcast focus. I mean, their focus is on storytelling, their focus is on journalism, their focus is on the research. And so in offering classes, I mean, it's really, and when we're talking about the curriculum and teaching students, it is about writing. Now, it is in thinking about the different forms of how you would present information, it's there. So, I mean, in terms of writing is, you know, writing and interviewing and reporting.
Do we get too caught up in, I guess my function here really is to ask the questions, but I'm going to tell a story too. Get a little too caught up in the idea of the medium itself.
What the question presupposes, that you're talking about print newspapers.
Well, and I guess where I'm going with this is I served for a while on the Polk Awards Advisory Board, and I remember going out for one of their seminars. It was the first year that one of the Polks had been awarded to a blog, to Talking Points Memo. And I remember being in the session and where Josh Marshall, you know, had talked about how they'd won it for breaking the U.S. attorney scandal a few years before, which in itself was a fascinating story, how they did that investigatory piece. But then at the end of it, you know, and this is in Brooklyn, so you're talking about a New York audience. Guy stands up, who's in his late 50s, tweed jacket, patches on the elbows, beard, you're beginning to get the profile here, and says, you know, Mr. Marshall, I really appreciate what you've done in terms of this story, but why are you and all of those bloggers trying to kill my New York Times, the newspaper that, you know, I love? And Marshall kind of ducked the question at first and said, well, I have tremendous respect for all other journalists. But then you could tell, he thought, he'd been asked this, and, you know, probably 5,000 times at that point. And he said, you know, when you think about it, at some level, a newspaper doesn't make business sense anymore, in that you're talking about delivering a service whose value is its currency, how recent it is. He said, so you're trapping yourself then in a static medium when you don't have to. And in the process, you're also assuming all sorts of distribution and transportation costs that you otherwise would not have to assume. And then he threw in a last argument, I think, more for the questioner's prejudices and said, and besides, if you don't have to kill several thousand trees every day to deliver your product, why should you? But the idea really was, you know, things don't change. Writing is writing, which I think was Lisa's point. Reporting is reporting. How we get it to you is a different, you know, question altogether. To some degree, that's changing in television, too, right, Chris?
It is changing, yeah. As I said, you know, we went from having just one or two newscasts a day to having several, and now we're, you know, we did the partnership with the newspapers, and now we're moving into the social media where you've got everybody shooting video and almost doing their own form of reporting. So, yeah, it's definitely evolving. As you said, I think evolving is a good word to use there.
How much of this is, you know, we talk about the technology and all of that, but what's really, at least has struck me as the biggest change in the business, is that journalists' roles, relationship with the audience. Chris, you're nodding your head.
Yes, because John and I were talking about this.
She sent two tweets
already. Right. John and I were talking about this a little while ago, and I was thinking about this on the way over here, was that, you know, there was a time when you were just the journalist. You were the objective view, and you were presenting the story, and now you have to interact, and you have to interact.
That's
and
right.
You have to find your voice, and you have to find the right voice for each platform, because it's different on Twitter versus on Facebook versus LinkedIn versus, whatever format you're using. Instagram, I'm still getting my hands wrapped around how I'm, you know, reporting my news on Instagram, which really isn't the venue for that, you know, but that's where part of your audience is. So you're trying to get your audience, and for TV, ultimately bring them back to the TV newscast, or at least, you know, reach out to new people. And so you have to be a little bit more personal. You have to show a little bit more of yourself. And so you're getting away, or are you getting away from that objective, you know, role that you had there at one time?
Yeah, and I see John wants to jump in, but some of it also that I'm going to reframe it. I'll give you the room to go there too. But is, you know, in the old days it was, okay, the news was something we deliver to you. And now it's much more of a constant circuit. It's coming back and forth, and the communication is constant. John.
Here's what I thought of as Chris was saying that. Doesn't that sound like fun? We were here waiting to go on, and Chris was taking pictures of us and tweeting them out. People like to do
this. So why I've got a face made for radio. But that's, yeah.
So people actually like to create media, right? So imagine someone paying you to do that all day and getting to do that. That's the attraction for students. They're not looking at, as I am, gee, the survival of community journalism and the importance of keeping an eye on City Hall and speaking truth to power and all of those high-flown ideas. They just relate to the idea that, gosh, this is kind of fun to do, and learning about this will give me the chance to practice it for a living.
Actually, we've gotten a Facebook question from someone I think Chris knows, Chuck Lofton. Says, hey, everyone, question for the panel. What are your thoughts on premium paid-for content on web spaces by newspapers and broadcasters? Will this trend continue? Can it be successful? Why? Lisa, we're throwing all the hard ones your way.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Give it to
is
the
that
dean.
My punishment for being on the phone? Well, it's an interesting idea. I mean, and we've seen some success with it, but we've also seen it not work so well. And so, and I would go back. I was thinking just a minute when we were talking about the fun of some of the social media in this, and I find though that students, it's not. I would think that they do look at this and they see it as a way to present information, but I think they also are aware of the ways that you can now present information and how the difference, say if I'm doing something, I think Drill Down was something that we used, you know, the visual, if I'm using large database now that I can present information this way. And of course we go back to Snowfall, that I'm sure that that everyone is aware of, but this idea of how now you have all these opportunities to be able to tell a story and to reach audiences in a way that perhaps we weren't able to do before, and to give them the opportunity to take it to another level. You know, they can scan it, they can use it if it's just to get a brief overview, if they need to, you know, they can return later and go deeper. So, I mean, I think that I think students are very excited about, now it can be overwhelming, I believe, in terms of people thinking that they have to be able to do all of this, but I don't think students can leave now without understanding how photographs work with a story, how video, I mean, when you talk about our students here that work with the IDS, I mean, they're very well aware that when they're covering a story that they can do, you know, take photographs and do a slideshow, that they can do interviews that are going to be put online, and that they can do all of these different things. And so they see all of these different pieces, these different formats, you know, in one story that they're able to use. So I think that's a pretty exciting way to deliver information. I mean, it's pretty exciting to me as someone who's working and teaching students. And it also, you know, we have some great classes that have students. I know I've kind of gone off track here, but just of students working together in teams, and where you have students who are able to, say, build, you know, the graphics that are needed, the infographics that are needed, the students who, you know, work together and cover a story with video, with you know, photographs, with writing. And so knowing all those pieces, that's very important. And also understanding how, when you're working with someone else, you know, working side by side, how you might be able to put that information into a story that's a, you know, a much better story than maybe it would have been before. So I think I answered the question about that. I think that there's the possibility that the business model could work about, you know, paying for information.
Chris?
I just want to mention, I think Chuck reminded me of this, just his sending in a question. But, you know, we talked about a lot of the challenges of getting the right information and accurate information out there. And I think one time where it works, not just one, but this is most recent, is during the recent tornadoes that we had, where I can't imagine what would have happened if we didn't have all the different mediums to use to tell people get to a safe place, to tell, you know what I mean? That's one time where it works in a situation like that, where you could really make a difference because you're telling people, hey, it's coming your way. And that's the fastest way you're going to get it to them versus the traditional way we used to see. It just came to mind, I think, from Chuck's email, but I wanted to make sure we mentioned at least one of the pros of having this when it comes to breaking news and that kind of thing.
Well,
Chris, I would jump in to say, too, I was in Baton Rouge during Katrina, and that was another, I mean, talk about a way to get information out and relying on different ways of getting that out. I mean, I think you're exactly right in that type of situation.
Well, the relationship also, the whole idea of the audience, I'd mentioned the whole Talking Points memo thing. I mean, John was an investigative reporter for a lot of years, and he knows the model that, you know, at least that in the newspaper business, we'd put a team on something and you'd go through everything, and it often was a long and exhausting process. The way Talking Points memo broke that U.S. attorney scandal is that, you know, the government did a massive document dump. I think it was late on a Friday, as they often do. And, you know, that what Talking Points memo did was set up a database and say to its audience, okay, you guys go in there, you know, we've got 50,000 pages or whatever that have to go through, sign up and say you're going to do a scan of, you know, 1 to 20, 21 to 40, whatever of these pages, and get through them and just tell us if there's something that merits a closer look from us. That's how they found it, and they were able to turn it around a lot faster than the traditional news model, which shows also the way this is changing. And I guess what I'm wondering, too, though, and, you know, that's the upside to that change. The downside is that media also had kind of a collective effect in that when we were all getting our news from basically the same sources, we at least had a, you know, a starting point for the discussions that we were going to have. Now that you can pretty much customize all of your news so that what Chris reads is different from what John gets, which is different from what Lisa gets, which is different from what I get. What's the effect of that on the way we function as a self-governing society? This time, Lisa, I'll give you a break and throw that one to John.
Dean Major, your thoughts?
Yeah.
Well, you know, there are so many good things, I think, about the disintermediation, if you will, that's happened that allows people to kind of speak up and be heard. I love the citizen journalism movement. I think it's terrific. I think that, as Lisa said a little while ago about the importance of media literacy, that people have to be better, smarter news consumers now than before. There's less vetting of the information that you're likely to see. And you're right. I mean, people live within spheres of their own bias and interests, and so you can if you believe the world looks one way, you can only associate and get information from others who view it through the same lens. That's where I think that our sort of our traditional pillars of journalism, and this, I know people will hate to hear that, but I mean, some of the brands that are out there are so critical, right? We have a certain level of expectation from major national newspapers and other news organs, and we expect them to, they may have columnists and others who are providing opinion, but we still expect to see things played down the middle and strong investigative work. There's going to be more things happening on the margins, Politico, I mean, you know, any number of different outlets for opinion and even investigative work. But
do we see that, though? And I guess where I would go is we see, though, at the national network television level, and I'll throw this one to Chris. I mean, you've got Fox on one end, MSNBC on the other, where, let's face it, I mean, they're basically opinion-driven news channels. The one that tries to, achieve the standard that John was talking about putting it right down the center and just presenting the facts is CNN, but it's dead last in the ratings and not particularly close. Does that create pressure even at the local level to see that kind of opinion-driven news presentation?
I don't see that. I don't see that at all. I think we're still just focused on what we're doing, you know, delivering, our news as best we can. And again, finding the right tone and the right platform to do it. I think we're just still trying to figure out the best way that it works for us on a local level. And I think, I mean, we've had that for a while with the cable news channels and all that. I think people are savvy to, you know, who plays where and what they believe in. But I think on the local level, you just try to work on building your brand, as John said. If you're going to be the news leader, if you're going to be the one to have it first, and if you're going to be the one that the best storytelling, you focus on that brand, and then you push it out to all the platforms in the best way that you can.
Chris, what is the change? And we're getting close on time here, but I'm going to ask, the change that has occurred in the news business that has been the toughest for you to deal with?
Well, you know, I don't know if it's because I'm from Indiana that change is just tough for me anyway, but I think it's just been finding the time, because I'm one of those that wants to craft a good story at the end of the day. And I think this has just been tough to find a challenge rather to find the right way to utilize each one of these platforms to do it in a good way to where you're reaching an audience, but you're still getting the point across. Because there's so, like I said, you have to incorporate so much of yourself in some areas, and other places they just want the information, and it's just trying to maneuver your way through that maze of social media. That's been the biggest challenge for me personally.
And I think that probably is going to have to be the last word here. I want to thank all three of you. Lisa Hatley-Major, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Enjoyed John, it. Thank you very much.
Certainly. Thank you. John Strauss, thank you for being with us.
Good to be here. Thanks.
And Chris Kirchner, thank you very much for joining us. Welcome you all back on Thursday when we are going to discuss same-sex marriage as the state legislature gets ready to take the subject up. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alsett. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.